Welcome to a podcast on fire on Heart of Dragon and Invincible Shaolin. And on this episode of the flagship show of the Podcast on Fire Network, Sammo Hung and Jackie Chan do drama and pickaxes to stomachs. And we check in on Shaw Brothers as well. And specifically on Chang Che and the performing troupe, because they were performing troupes before they were actors, known as the Venoms, for their third appearance together in 1978, this time in Invincible Shaolin. And my name is Kenny B, and with me is the man who can speak more eloquently and in a more knowledgeable manner about Shaw Brothers and martial arts on screen. And therefore, I welcome back Mike Maley. Say hi, buddy.
Hello, thanks very much. Thanks for having me back.
You're truly knowledgeable bot about these things, but you also can speak about the movies, like you like speaking about the movies, not just the technical aspects of them. So that's why we have two distinctly different movies, like an action drama and then sort of your forte in the form of Shaw Brothers and Invincible Shaolin. But we normally, like, I don't know, normally we fall into like the Lao Galong trap, so to say. I don't think you and I have discussed Chang Che extensively together, which is good. Like, you and I both love Lao Galong, but here Invincible Shaolin contains some stuff that you can pick out that I can't, so it's gonna be interesting. But you know what, quick fire lightning round question before we get to the contact information and before we get to Invincible Shaolin, like, what's your general take on the five Venoms, the movie, and these performers together? Like, did you like them from the get-go, from seeing the five Venoms, or is it like, for me, it's uneven quality?
Originally, it was, if you remember the Made in Hong Kong video cassette.
I do. I never owned it, but I know they did, the movie.
Yeah. I got a copy of that, and that was like the first time I'd heard of the Venoms. So I'm going back to like the mid, about 1994, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I got it. It was subtitled. It wasn't dubbed.
Oh, did I thought all of the Shaw Brothers stuff that they put out was merely English. They were widescreen, but hey, I might be wrong. They did English trailers, so maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Actually, Ken, you're probably right. I'm probably confusing it with the DVD, but it was, I seem to recall, it was a dubbed trailer.
Yes, it was. Yes, because the trailer is so great for the five Venoms. Like, Chang Che has broken stars like Jimmy Wang Yu, T Lung, yeah. David Chang, and here are the new ones. And that trailer is one of the best Shaw Brothers trailers out there.
I enjoyed it. It wasn't really expensive, so it's not as if I lost them, you know, a fair wadge of cash, and it was disappointing. But I did enjoy it, and it was I'd heard about them but never seen them in action before. Then, of course, once the DVDs became available, I think I've got most of the ones that were in that they did for Shaw's Brothers.
Yeah. I mean, the three, four, maybe five ones you can sort of count off on your fingers, like the key ones. They're out there, and even on high definition formats. But I like the five Venoms as a concept. The movie is sort of uneven for me, a bit talky. I like the idea of that it's a mystery rather than a, you know, standard kung fu movie. But the five Venoms didn't break through as much, but I get it. Like, that cultural impact and that visual impact that they bring in the movie as well as in the trailer, it's just cool. It's really, really cool.
It is, and it's funnily enough, because earlier today I watched, my daughter sat down, we watched Five Element Ninjas, because she's into her anime and her manga and all sorts of stuff like that. She's really into like ninjas and stuff.
Have you shown her Godfrey Hope?
No, not yet. And after that, I told her to watch The Five Venoms, but she kept, because it's on Netflix, she kept like fast-forwarding it because it was boring. And I'm saying, no, you got to watch it. It's more of a mystery, you know, mystery type thing to find out. Yeah, but I'll forward it to the fighting instead, so never mind. I did try.
Well, good on you for trying to make her appreciate whole movies rather than just the fighting aspect. But before I get to the contact information, I always chuckle when watching The Five Venoms, and it's not their fault. There's a piece of stock music in there that is the opening music from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where during the credits, and then the credits stop in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and they've sacked the people who did the credits. It's the same music as it appears in The Five Venoms as well. So I'm just thinking, like, The Five Venoms movie, like, it stops, and there's a text on screen, we've sacked the martial artists, and we've hired some new martial artists, and now the movie is on again. So it's always an unintentional chuckle, but a chuckle nonetheless.
Yeah.
There it is. I, I, I think it's library music, so I think it's just a coincidence that they both used it. Anyway, let's get to it. Some brief contact information before we talk Heart of Dragon. This is Podcast on Fire on the Podcast on Fire Network. Our website is podcastonfire.com, where you'll find this show and other shows on Korean cinema, Japanese cinema, ninja cinema, Godfrey Ho movies, and sleazy cinema, as well as bonus episodes every now and again. Email us if you have any feedback, podcastonfire@googlemail.com. And on said website, there's a couple of handy buttons leading to our Facebook page, which in turn will lead you to our Facebook group. So I encourage you to join that and join the discussion. And you'll find our Twitter, as well as links to our Stitcher page, where you can stream our shows. But you can also download applications from the Apple App Store and Google Play if you want to stream our shows via Stitcher. And the iTunes feed you can subscribe to, leave a star rating, and even a written comment if you are if you have something to say about the show, good or bad. And I do some reviews on the various genres in Hong Kong cinema over at sogoodreviews.com. I touch upon Taiwanese cinema as well, and various sleazy movies out of both Hong Kong and Taiwan. And my video hub, where I post my small video reviews, is available at sleazykvideo.com, and my Twitter handle is at sogoodreviews. And that leads us to you, Mike. You always have at least a blog to plug, but what's your position in your do you run your a martial arts class or school, or do you attend one, or what's the dealio there? And do they have a website presence over there?
I've just started to try and get one together with my teachers, like permission and stuff. So it's just in a phase of trying to get some students interested, because traditional kung fu training isn't for everybody. Do you know what I mean? It's you know, it's slow and laborious, and you know, and then people get disappointed when they find out they won't be able to fight like Jackie Chan. But you know,
are there really like such misconceptions in 2015 still?
I think, yeah, some people have this idea of what they think, you know, think learning proper traditional kung fu is about. You know, you've got to be able to run before you can walk. I mean, walk before you can run. That a lot of them want to run before they can walk. You have to start from the basics, and it's slow. But
what do you focus on specifically for those who are in the know about these things?
It's just all basic stance training, conditioning. Not specifically things like, well, I mean, we do like, you know, crunches, sit-ups, burpees, all that sort of stuff. But conditioning and holding up the limbs, the shins, the arms, the hands, mm-hmm. you know, iron palm training, that sort of thing. You know, developing your ammunition.
If people want to seek you out, what's the name of the school and the classes, if locals want to seek you out?
It's Walsall Chowgar. We have got a Facebook page, so if you just type in Walsall Chowgar, all the contact information is on there. And I've put some training clips up for people to have a look at as well.
Right on. And we'll link to those social media endeavors so people can seek you out. But in the meantime, let's take a short podcast promotional break. So listen to one of our friends in the podcast community's promos and support them if you like what you hear. And we'll be back to discuss 1985's Heart of Dragon with Sammo Hung and Jackie Chan by Sammo Hung. So he's the director this time around. So sit tight and we'll be back.
Son, it's time we have a talk.
About what, Dad?
Well, son, pretty soon you want to look at naked girls. Some movies have lots of naked girls and things that make you feel strange.
Like Sasha Grey videos?
Whoa, you've got to start off slow, son. Save the triple penetration gangbangs for when you get old and miserable. Savor the sight of bare breasts from a bygone era before they were a Google away.
Supper time, you two. And remember, no incestuous roughies or rapey pink films until after dinner.
The Trashy Trio, covering Euro sleaze, Japanese pink films, American roughies, or any other sordid entertainment that comes their way. The Trashy Trio, a podcast to listen to while alone, with headphones on. Probably in your closet, under some covers.
And welcome back, and the first review of this episode is Heart of Dragon. Otherwise, it's also referred to as Heart of the Dragon, but I'm one of those stupid fools that day if the exact way it's worded on screen, on the print, that's what I'm going with. So therefore, it's Tiger on beat and stuff like that. So
I was going to say that. He's ruined that for me, you git.
But Heart of the Dragon is certainly valid as well. So anyway, the plot from the Far East Films review of the film goes as follows. The story focuses on two brothers, Fung, played by Jackie Chan, and Dodo, played by Sammo Hung. And Fung is a cop planning his dream of sailing around the world. This is never realized as his priority is to look after his mentally challenged brother, again played by Sammo Hung, causing both resentment and constant stress. When Sammo's Dodo inadvertently and unknowingly gets mixed up with gangsters after taking their stolen jewels, he is kidnapped and Jackie must yet again go all out to see that his brother is safe. It's one of those, like, it'll lead to violence, all right. Take us through a short, bite-sized opinion, first of all, Mike, of Heart of Dragon, and I'll do the same, and after that we'll get into the deeper details. So what do you think of Heart of Dragon?
I do like it. I think because it's something different for that period in time, you know, the mid-80s Hong Kong cinema, and we had, like, the police stories and things like that, and it was something, and I don't remember the thing with somehow saying he did it because it's something different, and I do think it works well, and I do like it.
I agree. It is indeed a drama, like, it does have action, but as it stands in the Hong Kong edit, we'll get back to the whole different edits, this has declared that it is the former genre. It is a drama, and it largely follows through. Effectively so. Violence has a logical place, and I emphasize violence more than action, to be quite fair. It's a very violent and dark film, so without knowing anything beforehand of the movie, if you just go in completely blind, it's a Jackie Chan, Sammo Hung movie, let's watch it. And if you're sort of familiar with what they do, seeing your action favorites with machine guns early on signals a change in itself, and it's this sort of action scene in the backwoods which seems to feature callous killing, even though there's no squib work a la John Woo, and also it features, you know, stuntman or stunt actors and actors name check galore. You can play that game already from the get-go. Like, everybody's in it. There's Jackie, there's Mang Hoi, Chin Ka Lok, and even, like, future director Fruit Chan appears a little bit, director of Dumplings and Made in Hong Kong. So, yeah, I mean, do you remember seeing it back then? Like, if this was, like, different from the get-go, was it a shock to see them, like, callously killing people?
I just wonder from watching it that whether it was originally planned like that or they decided to stick it at the start because of the, as you said, it's a drama. Then I thought maybe we need to start it off with a bang, so we've got this scene in the woods.
It's a good point. I think it's supposed to set up. It's an exercise, as we find out. And between Jackie and his SWAT team, and the SWAT team is led by Lam Ching Ying. You probably just did a quick hop from the Mr. Vampire set or something like that over to this one. But you know what? Regardless if it was there from the beginning, it sort of makes sense to have at the beginning because it culminates in them, you know, at the end participating in a life and death exercise, not even exercise, obviously a life and death situation, but it could have worked without it though, so who knows. It even features a comedic beat from the get-go because when you see Jackie Chan, a grenade drops into frame and he does his big face, so you know it leans towards being a Jackie Chan movie, it seems anyway. But they can do gunplay fairly well though. It's done because it's an exercise, so it's a bit like loose, but it's fun to see this whole team choreograph gunplay quite well.
Yeah, I was just had a thought, actually. Do you think it was a that bit might have given him the idea to make Eastern Condors a couple of years later? I don't know.
Who knows? I mean, it sort of culminates. I'm a fan of Eastern Condors. I see weaknesses in it, but not in the action, though. I mean, that's as grand as it can be. And certainly, again, name check game galore. Like, Sammo, Yung Biu, Chin Ka Lok, everybody's in it. Like, there's Yung Wah. And it's fun to see everybody sort of not out of costume, but see them as regular folks. Like, seeing Yung Wah play a guy rather than, like, a vampire or that kind of villain, you know. He's not that guy anymore.
Yeah, it's one thing struck me about that scene as well. It's in, like, the woods, and they're tracking them. And they've got bright yellow tracksuits, like gear on. So I'd have thought they'd have gone for like camouflage, really. Made them a bit more difficult to spot. But, you know, there you go.
Like something yellow worked out for Bruce Lee, obviously, with the yellow tracksuits, right?
It was interesting because if you notice, all the weapons they were using, they were all like standard British Army issue at one point. So you've got the link there with like the British colonial control over Hong Kong.
For sure, yeah. But I think that's a good detail and sort of correct detail to have in the movie. All this doesn't mean it opens light and wacky or goes into light and wacky territory. I mean, we got Jackie's character into the CID dealing with a meth addict, drug addict, and he's supposed to take him to rehab. And there's nothing fun about that. I'm a drug addict. There's nothing akin to that. So there's a welcome straight feel here, which is, as you well know, if you watch a fair amount of Hong Kong cinema, Mike, a straight, even mood feel in a Hong Kong film sometimes can be rare. A movie can open super dark, a kung fu movie can open super dark, and then you know by scene three when you see whoever is trying to emulate the Jackie Chan comedic persona that the movie's gonna go into mostly unbearable kung fu comedy territory. Like, it's sometimes it is so calculated, but here it's it never really does that. It leads us, all of this, we're going through the movie a little bit in real time, but it's important to set up the fact that in the Hong Kong version, after Jackie, I've never seen the Hong Kong version, but I presume it cuts after Jackie's asked to take the drug addict to the meth clinic, and that leads to a fight scene. This fight scene, Mike, as you might know, is not in the Hong Kong version. It's a Japanese version exclusive to add some 1 out of 2 distinctive fight scenes to the movie. And you know, in general, do you think it belongs in the movie as such to all of a sudden go Sammo Hung style fight choreography here?
Well I mean, me being me, I'd have preferred if they'd have left it in, but as you said, the way the scene before was set up, when he goes to take him to get his methadone treatment or whatever, them not having it in really doesn't make much difference, does it? It's just an added extra bonus. So, you know, Jackie Chan gets to fight with Lau Kar Wing and a few other people, but other than that, I mean, leaving it out doesn't make that much difference to like the overall plot of the film. It's just a little side story, isn't it, really? Too,
I mean, it's a good scene as done. The choreography, despite having the huge team of you know, Yun Biu and Sammo Hung and stuff like that, the feel is that of a Sammo Hung fight scene. This is, you know, fighting hard Sammo style and not balletic prop juggling fun that usually a Jackie Chan scene can contain. And I say this all the time, but I think it's, I never get tired of saying it. I prefer Jackie being choreographed in Sammo style, you know, because I like when Jackie fights, you know, truly fights.
I agree. I totally agree. And you know, I think we've all probably said it before. He never looked better than when Sammo Hung's choreographing.
Exactly. I mean, just look at Dragons Forever. That has stuff like that is definitely Jackie fun. You know, when he almost hits his head on the fan and all of that stuff. But still, when even in a comedy like that, when Sammo's hard style that is all about mostly full contact, I heard, when that is present, that's just adds this cinematic boom that is so much fun. Like, it hurts watching that for our enjoyment. I mean, yeah, I'm sure you've heard Mark Houghton talk of working with Sammo, and Mark said, like, his encounter with Sammo on Skinny Tiger, Fatty Dragon went like Sammo saying, I'm gonna hit you in the face, right on. Well, that's gonna hurt, but it's gonna show up on screen, essentially. So and it does. I mean, it totally does. Even in a comedy like that, to have hard action is good fun.
It's interesting, that thing with Mark Houghton, because, I mean, he said how good he was to work for Sammo Hung. He's saying
loves. I mean, Richard Norton said how much he adored Sammo, and it was some of the hardest stuff that he's ever done in his life, you know. But it's never a miserable experience based on testimonials. Everybody likes it. Everybody knows it's hard. It's so hard. But no one, like, says that he's a tyrant that you hate but love once the celluloid is finished, you know.
It's I mean, that Richard Norton thing is exactly right. I remember a little bit of an interview when he says he'd like, he was working on, I think it's Twinkle Twinkle, and he said he never worked with us, and he's like a big. He said he's a big guy in his ammo, and he went right. What I'm going to do is I'm going to flip off this table and land on the floor, and Richard Norton was like going, yeah, right. And then he said he did it. He said he did like 12 takes. He said he just couldn't believe it. And it's, you know, it's quite surprising.
Indeed. And that leads us to Sammo, who's the director and also the leading actor, along with Jackie Chan. And he's playing a mentally challenged character who's in his 30s, close to 30, but his mental capacity is that of, you know, 6, 7, or 8 years old or whatever. And he acts like a young kid, he dresses like it, he has a haircut, like this sort of bowl haircut, if you describe it like that. And this is, he looks fun, he looks adorable. But we're going into, you know, sensitive territory in terms of portraying someone who's mentally challenged. And in my very uneducated opinion, because I have no experiences working with or having knowing someone who's mentally challenged, I don't think this is offensive as such. Then again, I welcome alternate views on this. I'm not saying this is if you challenge my opinion, I will challenge yours. Like, not at all. I'm just saying I don't think Sammo's performance is offensive. I think he nails this without it being condescending. But I welcome alternate views, so I throw that over to you. How do you think he balances that thing between offensive and sensitive, if you will?
I think it's one of his best performances. I think he's superb in it, and he just plays it extremely well. Some of the way that, not how he portrays it, but how some of the other people react to him because of his condition, it's that very un-PC Hong Kong mid-80s type.
Oh my God, people are so shitty to him in this movie.
Yeah, and it reminds me of like how people see the homosexual community when you watch Pantyhose Hero.
Yeah,
and it's a similar.
Don't get me started again, Mike.
Yeah, very very simple, very un-PC type of filmmaking. But I think Sammo in this plays him extremely well, and some of the characters in it are vile to him.
Oh my God, are they vile? I mean, that's probably one of my main criticisms of the film, that they sort of pushed that people are vile and shitty a bit too much. But you feel it, though. You feel it in your heart and your gut for him. But his character is coherent. He isn't he's got a speech pattern and stuff like that. So he isn't playing mentally challenged like that. But he obviously, being a kid mentally, he doesn't know how to socialize. He doesn't pick up what the signals are, what's wrong or what's right. And it's not a forced nature to see Sammo tackle this character. He has a natural actor in him, Mike, and that would flourish even more. And if you haven't seen these two movies, Mike, I if you like Sammo the actor, see them immediately. I mean, chief among them, the performances in Painted Faces and Eight Tales of Gold.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, exactly right. And I think that's two films people do need to see, because he's such a bloody good actor.
I mean, you never think of like, oh my God, the big action guy who flipped off a table in that movie, he's gonna act, man. Like, you never think that, because you just snap right into, oh my God, what an actor. He performs it so genuinely, like the scene in the restaurant where the kids and him think like, oh my God, you can eat for $10, because they see someone tip the waiter for $10 and they just start eating like crazy in there. And when he realizes that he's stuck with the bill, you know, his genuine sadness and distraught when stuck with the bill is actually, it's not too much. It could have been too melodramatic because it's a Hong Kong movie after all. It is rather sad to see him, alone and distraught in that situation. Jackie isn't there at that point, and his kid friends, they've all fucked off as well. So
they do what kids do the world over and will continue to do. They all bugger off and leave him to take the fall, yeah.
But it leads to one of those several scenes of adult people just harshly abusing Sammo. I mean, we got Teddy Yip as the waiter, and got Dennis Chan, who's a cunt as well, to him.
So, cunt.
So, I mean, they're all so shitty to him, but, you know, it might sound too cynical, but I'm going to say it anyway. This is not too far off from how people voice their discomfort openly. People still do that today, you know. I heard a story recently. Someone took their kid or whatever who's got cerebral palsy, or who had, what was it? Not CP, but had like ADHD or something like that to a show, to a theater show, and that kid was sort of loud and stuff like that, and people can't hold it in. They voice their discomfort openly, which is what people do in this movie, and 20 years later, for 35 sake, they still do it, and that somewhat taps into well, that people don't have any filter and are so proud of being like, I don't like him, I'm gonna let him know. He's a mentally retarded kid. Like, what do you think about that? That scene in the restaurant hits a real nerve, I think. They just kind of overemphasize it in further scenes that people are shitty. But not me tuning out of the movie. I just think that, okay, you play that card, Sam, for a while now. So, you know, as written, there are some real beats here. I enjoyed the little scene where you see Sammo in the bathtub. Jack is brushing his teeth. Is Sammo...
You see his big ass.
Yeah, that's a big man. Big. But it's the thing of he probably doesn't realize that, you know, he goes underwater and he stays underwater for like 10 seconds or whatever. And he probably doesn't realize that, like, he's losing breath by every second. He just says that, I was teaching my rubber ducks how to dive. And I think that's, I don't know about you, but I think that's a very real beat that he doesn't know. He doesn't know, he doesn't compute in his head that that's a life and death situation for him, that he could drown himself, you know.
It is a good scene, you know, Jackie said, oh God, what were you doing? You know, why does he keep floating to the top as well? You can't realise, because he's a rubber duck, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it could have gone so wrong, this could have gone to way too melodramatic and insensitive territories, but I think they all sort of reeled it in and made it balanced and, you know, tender rather than insensitive and stuff like that. I mean, there's a performance that Kent Cheng made very popular through several movies, starting in Why Me the same year, of his mentally challenged character Fat Cat, and that I remember being a very big performance, but I have to watch it again to truly judge if I think it's insensitive now, knowing a little bit more about life than I did 15 years ago when I watched it. But this is less so than the Fat Cat performance that Kent Cheng made famous. Directed himself in that one as well. So, you know, as I said, like, to add the scene of Anthony Chan as his tutor, who turns out when Jackie leaves to be really shitty to Sam. I mean, it's uncomfortable watching it, but I think the point has been hammered home that people are crappy, but I don't know what you thought, if it was uncomfortable good for the movie to have a parade of people being shitty to Sam.
Thing is, these people are cunts, aren't they? And I think it just shows you what actually the reality of it is. And as you previously said, it's still the same 30 years down the line. Now, that probably says a lot about society, I don't know, but that scene is uncomfortable because he's just saying to him, you know, the only reason I'm doing this is just to get money so I can go up the racetrack or whatever, you know, up the betting shop and whatever. You're an idiot. Yeah,
it's unusual to see Anthony Chan do that because he was one of the members of the group The Winners, and he was a Mr. Vampire. Always, you know, he never plays bad guys as such. And I love Anthony Chan. It's really funny. Like, yeah, you see him briefly in Mr. Vampire 1. His character gets his own movie together with Wu Mai in Mr. Vampire Saga 4. And he's really, really fun and stuff like that. But seeing Anthony being really, really shitty is, my God, this is making me uncomfortable as a fan of his. But hey, well done, I suppose. So,
Sammo again, isn't it? You know, I'll get this guy play somebody horrible.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, the crying level that Sammo starts, like, gradually crying and get distraught makes sense because he is a kid at heart and in his mind as he gets, you know, gradually pushed by Anthony. So I think Sammo getting his tears out in that moment is very real, I think.
It's brilliant, and it's funny because we're going back to him, you know, getting upset, and Anthony Chan says, oh, I have this lollipop, and he says, I don't want it. And then Jackie turns up and gives him a bollocking and tells him to piss off. And then I think it's a brilliant little, just a tiny little piece, but it's all finished. He's sorry, you know, Jackie's sorry and all of this. And then when Sammo gets up, he takes a lollipop with him. I think that's brilliant. And it's exactly the sort of thing a kid would do. I watched that, it cracked me up, made me laugh. I thought, that's great little bit, that is. But little bit of detail.
And that shows the filmmaker working, you know. And we're dealing with a genuine filmmaker, therefore, here. It's a collaborative effort, of course, but Sam, as a director, he's made good films. He's not just directed some action films. But speaking of action, the second fight that happens that is Japan exclusive is after a restaurant visit where Jackie Chan and his crew, the Mang Hoi, Ching Ka Lok, Yung Wah crew, they sort of clash with Li Hoi San and Fung Hak On and his crew, and it leads to this fight scene outside of the restaurant in this a stone's throw outside of the city, and they're in a little sandy area. The first scene fit well. I don't think this second fight scene fits as well, because it's more comedy infused. You know, it's more action comedy, and I think that makes the movie stray a little bit for those few minutes. But that's just my brief take on it. What do you remember and think of that second fight scene?
It was okay. I did recognise Chu Chi Ling as well. That was one of the because there's a bit he says they're all kung fu masters or something, and then they're outside. It was okay, but I don't think it added that much to the story, really. I think, as you said, it was just an added bonus for the Japanese market.
It is exactly that. I mean, there's been versions where this is in, but not official versions, where it has like Chinese and English subtitles, but they were never official. This was, I think, conceived fairly early on, either during production or in editing, that this is going to Japan. So it's certainly you can live without it, but the movie continues to focus on the story. I mean, the main story of Sammo, you know, tripping over the robber plot isn't in a hurry to start. I mean, the drama comes first. This is two brothers and their lives, and we find out sort of mid movie or one third into the movie that Jackie wants to be a sailor and has the chance to leave, and that's the main plot. You know, it's not, no, Jackie's got to save Sammo. That's not the plot that kicks in first. And I love the little dialogue, speaking of real moments, like when Jackie takes Sammo to the ship and you see that top shot where they're looking up at the boat. And Sammo, his character, is asking some very honest and logical questions about how tall is the ship? Well, it's not about how tall it is. It's about how big it is. And then I can't remember it verbatim, but he sort of asks, if the sun is therefore small, if it's far away. And that's what a kid would ask. Like, they connect sort of like, if... Like, it's not stupid. I think those are honest, like, questions to ask. And they may not like be lingering moments in the film, but I like these one-on-one dialogue scenes between these two action giants. They're acting together right now and providing some real dialogue here based on the Barry Wong script. But my God, I take away those moments from the film, you know.
It's very true. And there's the other thing as well. I mean, you know, he's Jackie Chan's brother, but Sammo is a child, isn't he? So when he collects him from the police station and he's holding his hand, and then people are like laughing at them again. Oh, yeah, bloody...
He's my brother. He's my brother. Like I says to everyone, he's my brother. It's not gay.
But it's still a nice thing because he's his brother and he's holding his hand. And it's something I think that works really well.
It leads to an outburst eventually, but I just wanted to briefly say that I love Sammo. He's a good reactor. He's an actor that can sit in a scene and react to watching adults speak. You know, his character watching adults speak. There's a bit where Jackie's trying to set him up with a temporary family while he's gone with this lady and his and her kids or whatever. And she says, like, I think Jackie says he likes pork. Well, in this family, we don't eat pork. And someone says to the mother, we had pork yesterday. Shut up. And Sammo is just sort of watching them talking, like, back and forth, following them like a tennis match or something. Like, okay. Don't know what's going on, but I'm trying to follow as best as I can. I don't know if he has lollipop or licorice in his mouth or whatever, but he's a good reactor and underplayer too. Like, when he thinks he's been dumped by Jackie, the kids have told him, no, he's leaving. He's dumping you. He doesn't realize that. And then Jackie comes home. Sammo has his toys on the floor, and he sits there and sulks, you know, and... that's spot-on childish behavior, and I don't think that is easy to nail. You know how kids behave, but you got to be a good actor to inhabit that shell and get it done on screen, you know. And I think he does, and that leads to the whole, as I said, the Jackie Chan outburst, the dramatic outburst.
It is a good scene. I mean, the bit when you mentioned when he's going to get the woman to look after him. She's fleecing him, isn't she, really, for the money? You know, oh, he eats this. And then it's one of his little friends who's, and like kid, you know, kids do, don't they, like the time. Well, we had it last night. Shut up. You know, no, I don't know what he's talking about. And I also thought that the little kids in it that are in like his gang were really good as well. Some of the scenes with them just made me really laugh. Like the bit at the start when they're and he's saying to him, well, what would you like? Would you like a woman or would you like a cake? And Sam's going, I want a cake. Yeah, and they were really good. And there's a scene when they're sitting on the steps and he's talking to his friend, the one, and he's, while he's talking to Sam, his mate behind him, he's like eating his lollipop without him seeing.
Yeah, exactly. I remember that. That was good acting choreography, essentially, you know.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, done in one rather than cut up into a tiny little edit. So, good, well-timed. You know, the outbursts that are melodramatic, they're mostly earned. There's essentially only one melodramatic outburst that I think sort of fails in an expected Hong Kong way, because they tend to overplay it. But when Jackie, you know, starts to voice his frustration, you know, having been such a loyal brother, and his brother doesn't appreciate that because he doesn't know, it's a real dark and frank dialogue here where Jackie just says, you know, I would have strangled you. Sometimes I just would have strangled you and killed you just to get you out of my life. But I didn't. You know, I stayed on like you never saw me leave. And my God, I think that it could have gone so wrong. It could have felt so like, here we go, melodramatic Hong Kong again. But my God, that is dark. That cuts to the core. And they earned that melodrama, you know. You don't sit there and cry necessarily watching that scene, but you go like, oh my God, that's heart-wrenching dialogue, you know?
I did have something in my eye when I was watching that, funnily enough, actually. You know, it did bring a tear to my eye, especially when he goes into his room afterwards and he says, don't cry, and all of this, and it's and then Meng Hoi turns up and he starts crying, so I think it's
that
a good
was
little...
the only bit that sort of like Meng Hoi. He's a great little actor, and I call him little actor because he still looks like he's 12 years old. He's so young. He still looks like that. Like, when he starts to cry as well, that was like, I don't know if that was convincing, but, you know, he means well. Samo means well and all of that. And, you know, we're talking about this being a drama and not an action piece, and normally their action pieces worked well at the box office. Drama is not foreign to Hong Kong audiences, but you never know how it's going to turn out when Sammo does it and features Jackie. But it was a fair success. 20 million at the Hong Kong box office is not too bad. I mean, it's just Police Story was maybe a few millions more, for instance, if we're talking a Jackie movie from the same year. So it played well with audiences. And I think Sammo might have gotten a nomination. I didn't look that up, but it's certainly deserved if he did, either in Hong Kong or Taiwan. People being shitty to Sammo, like, okay, we get it, but it's a hard scene to watch still when Sammo encounters Wu Ma, who's also a cunt in this movie.
Yeah, he's king of the cunts in that film, that guy is.
Because Sammo, okay, I'm going to do good. I'm going to look for a job. And he doesn't know. He doesn't know. So he goes to this restaurant and they start to take advantage of him in the most horrible way. And the man does, the woman doesn't. I mean, finally, Sammo portrays women in a better light than usual. You know, normally he just have them being beat on screen. But the woman like tells him, oh, you gotta act like a bull. Oh, I can act like a bull. And he starts to parade around the restaurant acting like a dog as well. I mean, there you go. Having a Chinese person act like a dog, that's just humiliating. And Sammo doesn't know. He doesn't know. And that is... I've seen it before in the movie, but that sequence still made me wince in this way where I was on board with the scene. It's a tough one, but there's a stunt that goes... We're jumping all over the place, but there's a stunt that went horribly wrong in this movie. It doesn't show up in the movie, but in the outtakes. My God, I can't remember the context now, but a character drops, jumps out of a window, lands onto this thing that you... this I don't know what you call it, this curtain outside the window to protect from the sun, and then bounces on that and onto a car. And that's how it works in the movie. Ta-da! Perfect. It didn't go so well in the outtakes. I don't know if you've seen the outtakes, but
yeah.
Ching Ka Lok did the stunt once and missed the thing with the window and went right into the asphalt. It's probably the most horrible thing I've ever watched in my life, my God. And it's in slow motion. To one of the angles is in slow motion. It just, oh no, you know, crack. And I'm laughing about it because it's so horrible to watch. And they carry off Chin Ka Lok, who is just out at that point. He just looks like he's out of it. And whoever they got to actually do the stunt, and good on them that they have such a wild and extensive stunt team. But that is probably the most horrible thing I've ever seen. And it's the second Jackie Chan movie in 1985 where people hit the pavement hard. With Police Story prior.
Police Story, yeah.
So my God, I mean, it's a great stunt, and and it's what it is. It's horrible to watch the slow motion aspect of it as well. But even in the full 24 frame thing, where you just krunk, you know, the fall goes really fast. He just misses that thing. I mean, they don't need to do that stunt, but they do it obviously. Like they don't need to make it so complex, but they know it will show up on screen, and it comes with risk factors that. No one said, they never said no to these guys in the 80s, but over time they started saying no to them. I think they started not insuring Jackie and stuff like that, so because insurance companies have had enough by that point.
It is, I mean, you put it on the podcast on Fire page, didn't you, the other day, and it's, I think the scene is when Chung Fat is going to meet James Tien,
yes.
The Mr. Biggs, goes in like this restaurant and turned up basically to kill him, and he jumps through a window, bounces off that canopy and lands on the car. But it also says like about the quick thinking of the stunt team, because as soon as he's missed and hit the ground, the guy in the car's obviously hit the brakes.
There's a car approaching as well. You're right, it's not even stationary.
Obviously these guys are really good at thinking on the feet or on the concrete, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. And are completely reckless at the same time, because there's no need to make it that difficult. But it looks great on screen when they finally got it, whoever did it, whether it was Kali or someone for, like, you know, Curry.
Yeah.
But, you know, they had a major stunt team on that, and they could just put a little fluffy wig on someone, because I think Chung Fa was in his mild perm days anyway at that point. So there it is.
Yeah, he was. At least he didn't have a moustache either. But there you go. It's odd because it's one of those, the golden age of Hong Kong action cinema. There's always a stunt going wrong, isn't there, during the filming?
I mean, yeah, if you set the level this high, reckless level and technical level this high, you know, the risk percentage increases immediately. For sure, this was captured. And I was like, in these movies, I'm not sure there was another angle, but, you know, when you see the accident in Armor of God, you know, the camera is there, like, oh my God, he's hurt, let's shoot Jackie. Lying there being like completely out of it and possibly dying. Like, there's a Mondo feel to certain of these outtakes. But I think Jackie and co sort of insisted on just roll the damn camera. Like, if I'm hurt, feel free to shoot me in pain. Like, that'll be good for the outtakes.
And it adds to the legend that he's Jackie Chan, isn't it? You know, he literally, you know, suffers for his art. Yeah, to the point of nearly dying. Do you know what I mean?
So there's a similar shot in Operation Condor where he looks even more painful and out of it when that chain snaps.
Yeah.
And the camera is there, like, shooting, like, get a shot. It's so sadistic, but there it is. You know what? The movie switches into thriller mode, and I think, you know, it's been a drama, and now it's a thriller. Sammo, they play cops and robbers, and Sammo comes up with a gun towards Chung Fa, who thinks he's a cop, and he throws the bag over, or leaves the bag, and there the movie switches into action thriller. So, you know, in general, do you think the drama, the action, and the thriller sort of coexists? Does the switch work to serious, like deadly serious?
Yes, I do. I think because it's such, you know, got such a good cast, and you know, Sammo pulls it off. It's a good scene when he's walking up the alley with his toy gun and the black thing. Bloody hell, the police. I think it does work.
I mean, yeah, it doesn't try to renew the game here with this movie, but as you know, that switch to falling into the robber's plot, I think it's very smooth because they're just playing and coincidences happen, you know, in life and in movies. So it's not a stretch for this to happen, and it's not a stretch for these guys, this stunt team, these actors who we're used to seeing, you know, engaging in other types of action. It's not a stretch to see them at this, you know, at this, in this edgy tale, this real tale where these guys engage in real gun violence. you know, the stunt work required is still high as hell for the ending, and obviously the one we discussed. But this is, I was shocked, Michael, but I saw it fairly recently for the first time. I knew it was a serious movie, but I didn't know it was this effectively violent, you know, and darkly violent for real show. And it certainly works. It doesn't feel like several movies in one. That's my sort of end point for now, because we're sort of at the construction site ending where they take on Philip Coe, and who's got a lovely moustache in this one, a very lovely, very fake moustache, Philip Coe. But he's so extensively around that I always think Philip Coe goes a bit underrated in the cinema community. But because he does so much, some of it not as good. But man, he's effective when he's at the top of his game. You know, go back to Shaw Brothers with Eight Diagram Pole Fighter and stuff like that.
I was just going to, and that's your mind reader. I was just going to bring that up. It is something that he's very underrated. I mean, and the like movies like The Loot and The Challenger too, when he's like the main protagonist in those, you know, the main villain in those. He's just, you know, the same could apply to the guys in the Hungar band. You can see why Sammo kept using them a lot, can't you? Because they were so skillful and so
reliable.
And reliable, yeah, exactly.
Because you want things to go smooth when you're acting at this reckless level. You know, you want people that are, you know, do that stunt, I will. You know, you want people to sort of make it smooth like that, rather than people going like, oh, no, not going to do it, not going to do it. Give me two rice boxes this lunch instead. Like, it seemed to be no extensive, like, back and forth to get people to do this. And my God, many of them, well, a lot of them, all of them, survived this period, you know. I know Chung Fat received an injury of some sort, which made him, as the decade went on, he couldn't do as much. But Chung Fat was always sort of a reliable, quirky actor, too, that you can put in movies on that level and have him perform regardless. So Chung Fat's main claim to fame wasn't just action.
I think it's something that, you know, it's in a lot of Sammo's films as well. You know, you've got Chun Fat, you've got Dick Way, you've got, you know, Kao Fei and the other guys. One of them usually has a standout sort of role in one of the films.
Yeah. Dick Way certainly isn't in it a lot, but I don't know if that's the most quoted fight scene in a movie, him and Jackie, within the construction site ending.
So I was watching it, and it is a great scene, and the thing is as well, it's the brutality that Sammo brings to it, and it's very, if you've ever seen Carry On Pickpocket.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time. Like, I remember it being 90% comedic, and then brutality took over.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's Sammo's 40. You get your comedic stuff, you get your drama, and then the bone crunching finale kicks in.
My God, just to get back to Carry On Pickpocket, imagine it's the same movie that has Sammo in his little Mickey Mouse t-shirt, like playing with it, the buns, the bread, and then boom, that action ending. Like, welcome to Hong Kong cinema.
This has got it at the end in spades as well. I mean, there's the you mentioned the pickaxe scene, which was cut, I seem to recall.
Pickaxe, yeah. To their stomach, and yeah. Boom, dead. You're deaf, real deaf. Not people just... It's something Jackie Chan, I'm talking for Jackie Chan right here, okay? I don't think he was naturally comfortable with this persona on screen, because he didn't do it himself as much, you know, the killer, being someone who kills. Like, I think Jackie's quote about that my movies doesn't feature violence but action is something he prefers, but it's not like he hated doing a movie like this, but it's rather like, this is Sammo's vision and I'm part of that. But I don't think he preferred someone who's sort of leaning towards vicious, you know.
I couldn't understand that, because as you said, I thought it was quite, you know, compared with Jackie's movies he's directed, they're not really, people aren't meeting their ends in such a violent manner, are they? Like being skewered with spikes, or, you know, shotgunned and hit with pickaxes and things.
Which is
that.
Absolutely fine. I love that we have distinctive visions. I just prefer, you know, I mean, it's the violent, cinematic violence and gorehound in me that, oh, I like this. But yeah, I mean, there's machetes to necks and stuff,
yeah,
like that.
Grand,
and,
yeah.
And also, like, when people get shot, there are, you know, fought through and reckless stunts to go with that. So they do, it's not out of their wheelhouse to do this. And It's very compelling, and it works for the movie and with the movie, with the drama. The final scene where the 6-7 stuntmen are falling out of the sort of half-exploding building, there's some grenades that explode. I wrote in my notes, when all of them jump out at the same time, whoever they were, what the serious fuck? Because that jump looks to be from 3-4 stories up, and they all jump out at the same time, and you can't control that. You're bound to bounce into one another either mid-air or when you fall onto the cardboard boxes below. The elements are going to carry you from that point. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to fall into their separate space and all's going to be fine. It's one of those, just jump out of the building and they'll land wherever they'll land, on top of each other or not.
It's that, like, that Hong Kong thing, like, even in, like, when the fighting rooms, when the guys knock somebody out of the gap in the air, they spin around a lot of the time, they hit something before they hit the floor. And in this, when they jump out, they just, like, from that floor, and when the explosion comes out, there's, like, a wooden platform, kind of, and a couple of them go through that as well. I think that just adds to, like, the, oh god, that's, you know, that's got to have hurt. But as far as, I mean, just to digress for a little minute, the stunts in the film are blooming good anyway. I mean, you've got a really good little car chase with motorbikes and Jackie's bright yellow Mitsubishi, which is no product placement there, and you know, obviously the work of Blackie Coe. But there's even a little bit when, just going back, when the kids go, they've hidden the loot and they go back to get it, and Ty Bow's there and he does, like, basically a robbery, and he boots Sammo in the face, and Sammo does this superb, like, flip over this the rail and rolls downhill. I just, you know, and it's, I watched it on freeze frame. It's definitely him doing it.
Yeah, and that's a long roll down this hill that's like 40-50 degrees in slope, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's one of those, that, and it goes on forever in the movie, but it seems like a very tall or long hill that he rolls down, and through elements too, not like elements they planted, but through elements that are there, you know, bushes and you know, vines and sticks, you know, sticky, yeah, sticks. So I'm sure he got a little bit scraped up at least.
Yeah, and back to the finale with all the you know, all the fights kicking off, and there's some really, really cracking little stunts in there. There's a really funny bit when Peter Chan Lung does, like, shoots a couple of guys, and he sees some barrels, and he jumps through one of the barrels, and there's no bottom to it, and it just goes straight down to the floor below, and he lands on, like, loads of rubble, and he's unconscious. And there's the bit which reminded me of Dragons Forever, that the end fight when he's fighting Dick Way, and he gives him this really hard sidekick, and he goes into a load of bricks that are piled up behind him. In Dragons Forever, there's a load of it's like boxes of heroin and stuff, isn't it? That he just, like, plows through, and that just adds to the impact. No pun intended.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, like, where did that little brick wall came from? But man, it looks hard. It doesn't look like soft bricks, you know, hollow bricks or anything. Because you can feel the impact and the weight.
Once you watch quite a few of these films, when you watch, like, these Hollywood films and that, the stunts, you just watch them and think, you know, that wasn't as good as the end of Police Story or whatever. Yeah? And you can see why Hollywood started to import some of the stunt work that the guys in Hong Kong used to do.
As a consequence, they couldn't do it as they did in Hong Kong, because you can't. When you go to somewhere where there's rules and regulations, that's going to change, and you have to adapt to that, unfortunately. So
yeah.
I mean, I don't wish anyone to be hurt in these movies, but it shows up on, it's more exciting this way, when it shows up on cinema this way. You know, the record of stunt persons you know, hurting themselves permanently and dying in Hong Kong cinema is very, very low. I mean, the only incident I can think of is this freaking incident on the Modern Action or Downtown Torpedoes, where there was an explosion and for the movie, and sort of a fragment hit someone on the crew, like a stuntman on the crew, and that person passed away from it. But considering what we see in these movies, like their record, unless I'm forgetting some famous incident, but whatever, I think the record is very, very low, considering what the mad stuff that they were up to in the 80s.
Yeah, and it ties back into, going back to, we had a little chat about Richard Norton earlier, and he was saying that Sammo, oh no, it was Mark Hent, wasn't it? He says Sammo looks after his people, And obviously, the ones who go to hospital, well, you know, they've got tip-top treatment. See, on Hero Maker's documentary, when this guy working with Samo got injured, and he somehow paid all his hospital bills and stuff. I mean,
good man, good person, like being there immediately and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Very good, very good. Respect. I don't have any other notes, so the floor is yours in terms of if you want to say anything else.
Apart from just the ending?
Yeah, the movie doesn't end. I don't want to spoil too much, but the movie doesn't end as quickly as you might think. So sort of a bit of a mystery in a way, like there's sort of a coda, if you will, that takes place over a cantopop ballad. But, you know, I didn't dislike it or anything. It's not a horrible tag on it that goes on for way too long. Like, the song is really good, so that helps.
And it is quite a nice ending as well. Mm-hmm. Just think of going back to Lam Shin Ying. Obviously, he did turn up off the set of Mr. Vampire because he's got the same eyebrows, hasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
You can tell straight away. I was thinking, why is he, he's obviously just come off the set for that to do a little...
Do you have, like, 10 minutes, Lam? Sure thing.
Yeah.
Like, take off your Taoist robe. You can't have that. Really? Okay. Fair enough.
He probably had that on underneath all of his camouflage. You never know. Stranger things have happened. And the other thing I noticed, I mean, me being a bit sad, the HKL DVD cover is taken from the fight scene at the end in the the building site at the hotel when and he's taking cover behind the wall and he's got a gun. But what they did on the HKL DVD cover, they put a different handle holding a different gun.
Why focus on those details, HKL, that is? Like, it doesn't look hard enough? Doesn't look manly enough?
Well, in the film, it looks like he's using a cult detective special, something like
that. Because the still is really good, like, and it's from the damn movie as well. There's not a different still with Jackie and a black t-shirt or anything, but it's from the damn movie, so...
Yeah.
Who knows, these marketing people. Like,
but it does look like the same gun that Lam Ching Ying was using at the start of the film. It's like a nickel-plated 45 automatic, so maybe that's what we got it from, sorry.
Bad, but not too bad.
Yeah, not too bad.
Right on. Let's talk availability then. There's a few things to talk of. We'll briefly repeat the fact that the movie was released in at least two different versions. The Hong Kong edit, which was the basis for the English dub of the film. It's the same length, so the English dub wasn't reduced to anything. But also an exclusive Japanese version featured the two fight scenes that were officially not in the Hong Kong edit. And I say officially because a friend of mine told me that bootlegs were around of these two scenes still in the Hong Kong edit of the movie, subtitled in Chinese and English and all. So they prepared it that way in some shape or form, but it was never officially put out like that in Hong Kong. That might still be around, this being the era of the internet and all. The latter scene at least has dialogue, you know. The first fight scene might be dialogue-less, so you may not need to subtitle that. Japan got exclusive outtakes as well, and in this case exclusive scenes, as well as an alternate score and a Japanese language theme song by Jackie, which doesn't fit the movie at all. Like, it is this da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Tokyo something something da da. It's very loungy and very like groovy and moody. It's not what you want to hear after a dark ass thriller drama, but Jackie sings it in Japanese and it's charming on its own, but mood is broken. But hey, he sung it in Japanese, so that's fun. And the alternate score is actually not very good at all. It doesn't fit very well. Like, it's a bit more light for the movie that we're talking of here. The movie in Japan is actually slightly longer in the brief scene that Mike referred to, where Jackie puts a pickaxe into one of the ending bad guys. That was, in all likelihood, a censor cut in Hong Kong to a degree. I've never seen it cut, so I don't know exactly what was out, but it is complete in the Japanese version of the film. And that Japanese version of the film is available on a good... a high-definition version on Japanese Blu-ray, but that has no English subtitles. But it is out there in good shape. United Kingdom's Hong Kong Legends put out a special edition DVD of the Hong Kong edit that's still around at reasonable prices. And there's also a Fortune Star Hong Kong Blu-ray that released in Hong Kong that is most likely million upscale from their remastered DVD, and it features remixed audio only, which is something Fortune Star rarely does well at all. New effects, badly inserted and stuff like that. So I'd recommend trying to find the Hong Kong Legends DVD for a subtitled version. And if you don't need subtitles, then the Japanese Blu-ray, I think, for Japanese Blu-rays is reasonably priced. So okay, let's take a break and move back to 1978 and talk... Go on to the Shaw Brothers stages, so to say, in the discussion, and talk Chang Chieh's Invincible Shaolin. I think the first movie after The Five Venoms, and they're back together a few months later to have some new adventures. It's not a sequel, but the Venoms are back, and we'll talk Invincible Shaolin from 1978 after the break.
Yo, are you looking for a podcast that breaks movies down like you couldn't believe? I mean, takes them apart piece by piece and analyzes every little thing, getting you the most out of every movie that you ever could. Well, look no further than The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema with Samurai and Big Willie. These fuckers know how to review movies, or my name ain't the head.
You can find The Gentleman at ggtmc.com.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Welcome back, and the second movie up for discussion is Invincible Shaolin from 1978. And plot from the Far East Films review of the film: Shaolin remains a constant thorn in the side of the Manchus, and their dominance is threatened by this possible enemy. One Qing warlord, played by Wang Longwei or Johnny Wang, devises a fiendish plan to get rid of the threat of Shaolin forever. He organizes a battle between fighters from North Shaolin and South Shaolin, but he stacks the odds against one side, resulting in a tragic death. His scheme works well, and the perceived aggression is countered by South Shaolin, who organized their top three fighters to train under different masters and exact justice. And in the North camp, the North camp is represented by actor Lu Feng, Chang Sheng and Sun Chen, while our southern camp consists of Lo Meng, Wei Pai and Philip Kwok. So there we are, my brief opinion this time around. It's a movie we recognize. It's a movie using an age-old template and not changing the game, but it kind of shows how compelling a movie like this can be when it executes in all areas. You know, it maintains interest where so many others fail to maintain interest, and it seems, and this is me taking a shot in the dark, and that's why you're here, it seems grounded and even somewhat educational in spots, but I might be wrong. It just seems like it isn't outlandish in spots in terms of how they train. But your short opinion of Invincible Shaolin?
Great film. I do it's one of those that, said this before, but as a film you hear about it, read about it in books, and when it came out I ordered it, and it did live up to the expectations. I really enjoyed it. And it's one of the best ones the Venoms done, in my opinion.
I agree. I wasn't very on board with The Five Venoms, the movie. It's okay. And as we discussed off air, it's stylish and iconic, and I like its cultural impact it had. But as a movie, I mean, I like that it tried something different, being a talky mystery, but it didn't blow my mind or anything. Invincible Shaolin bettered things on a number of levels, and Crippled Avengers is probably my favorite Venomous movie because it's so utterly mad. No, they get crippled, but they get to be Iron Man essentially, which is cool. This brings in, you know, North Shaolin masters, as I said, versus South Shaolin masters, and as Johnny Wang's character said, you know, the South Shaolin, they were brash, but they helped, but he suspects their loyalty isn't where it's supposed to be. But it leads to my question: do you know anything, watching this movie or in general, about North versus Southern style? I mean, has it ever been part of your training or know-how, this difference in North versus South?
There's always been the story saying that there's the North Shaolin Temple, which is in, wherever is it, Henan province or whatever, and there's always been rumors and, like, you know, stories about these Southern Shaolin temples, as in the movie Shaolin and all that sort of stuff, and they reckon there were other monasteries around southern China, but I'm not too sure about the factual implications of that. There's always been two different, they've always said that you know there's two different schools. There's a Bak Sulam, Northern Shaolin, and Nam Sulam, Southern Shaolin. They're always, and it goes back to, is it Nam Kuan, Bak Toy, Southern Fist, Northern Leg. So they always reckon that Northern styles were very much orientated towards lots of kicking and stuff, and the Southern styles were more orientated to the more handiwork made from stable stances because it was a lot marshier and all this sort of stuff. But I think that's just some sort of marketing. I don't know, because I've seen Southern and Northern systems, and a lot of them have got, I mean, if you look at something like Northern Praying Mantis, things like Chatsing Seven Star Mantis and things like that, they've got bath kicks and lots of hand techniques as well. So really, that just contradicts, you know, the whole Nam Kuan Bak Toy phraseology.
Yeah, I remember hearing something like that too. And for movies, it might be easier to do it like that. And they certainly seem to in this movie, like with the North Camp having Sun Chen, who does, you know, great kicking as part of the demonstration that they do before Wang Longwei in the beginning. And I like it. It's fun and exciting demos to start the movie, not during the credits, but during the first scene where they sort of are courted by Johnny Wang. And like when Sun Chen, you know, kicks the dummy and Chang Sheng uses a staff versus the dummy, this, I don't know if you call it a two-section staff, but it is a two-section staff, but it's not 50-50. Like, it's more, it's a tiny staff, not tiny, but a smaller staff, and largely it's one solid staff. And when he uses that versus the dummy, that stuff is so well conveyed cinematically. I mean, it's still cool, that stuff. You got a clean frame, clean-looking frame, they shoot it well. And when they, you know, he kicks the head of the dummy, you know, boom, cool. When he, you know, uses a staff versus dummy, boom, cool. That's the kind of critique I'm resorting to. I think this looks cool. If it's at all sort of rooted in real martial arts as they do. I mean, the whole hand technique, I don't know what that's called. If that even is like 0.00% rooted in reality, I don't know. But it looks cool on screen, the way they can sort of uses their hand and cause damage that way, internal damage and whatever. So, I mean, that's Chang Chieh's confidence and sort of a skill and, you know, veteran presence being here, but also the action team obviously helps to convey this in a cool manner. Like in when they kick into slow motion, that's always cool. And Chang Chieh used slow motion very well, and no wonder John Woo took that as an inspiration and went into his own direction. So
it is the two-section staff, and it's used in not just Northern systems. I mean, it's used in others. I mean, there's a Southern style called Mok Gar, which is one of the five family styles, I call them. You've got Hung, Choi, Li, Lao, and Mok, and they're supposed like to be the five Southern family styles. And Mok Gar, I know for a fact that they use the two-section staff in that. So, as one of the weapons.
You never see that too much in martial arts movies. It's normally that when that surprise when someone is fighting with a staff, and then boom, it's three section. He breaks it into three. But I can't remember seeing a two section staff extensively on screen anyway. Which is which felt new to me anyway.
I think it's one of there might be other films, but I'm not that familiar with them. That where it's been used, like it's prevalent throughout the film that he's got this two section staff. But it is, it's brilliant with the choreography as well, because it's, staff as well, you've just got one part, but when you've got two or even more moving parts, it makes it a lot trickier to do the choreography.
It's always why I think weapons choreography is a lot more exciting, especially in the Venoms movies, when they employ weapons and stuff like that. One of the weaknesses of Cripple Avengers was after a while they just were sort of showing off acrobatics and not fighting, but otherwise it's a cool movie. But this is a cool movie also because it presents, you know, sort of morals and valid righteous train of thoughts. Like Sun Chen says at one point when, you know, they're confronted with the Southern Shaolin camp, if you will, we are one school. You know, this is not life or death. We are supposed to be one school. And as shoehorned in as that might sound, it actually isn't. I think it has a valid space here to present those train of thoughts, you know, and ultimately it's about not turning against each other because they're being puppeteered. I think that's a decent little train of thought within a very simple to pick up and understand martial arts movie.
It is, and you there's a line in the film when he says Sulam Yatgar, and that means Shaolin one family. So it's the whole point. But I've just remembered something. It's me old age. I forget stuff. Going back to the technique with the Liu Feng with his like palm strikes and that. It's the same sort of thing as in Five Fingers of Death. You know, it's iron palm, and that's prevalent in northern and southern systems, and it's just a training regime, a conditioning your hands.
Yeah. I always understand that it's exaggerated for movies, but I never knew if it was present in any minor way in real life and in training. So
yeah, I mean in the system that I practice, Chow Gar Tonglong, Southern Mantis, iron palm training is prevalent in a lot of other systems anyway. I mean, it's not just Chinese martial arts. I mean, I know systems like Hung Gar, Chui Li Fut, Wing Chun, other branches of North and Southern Kung Fu, they do condition the hands and the arms just to make them harder. So when you strike somebody, because your hand's nice and conditioned, you get a better effect, really, because it's going to hurt them more. And Japanese, I mean, things like Kyokushin Karate, Gouja Ryu, other systems, they do a lot of external conditioning the hands just for that. A lot, like I said before, about preparing your ammunition. Then the next thing you've got is generating your power, and that's like your gun. So combine the two, you can use devastating striking. And that's obviously how Liu Feng's double palm technique works, all the internal damage that he does when he hits somebody with them.
Yeah, he's neither one who cracks one of the other guy's skull open, essentially.
Yeah, I love the bit on the dummy when they're demonstrating, he just hits it and nothing happens, and then he just taps the arm and this wood falls out. You've got these two handprints and I think that's great.
it's like it's super silly in a way because the handprints are perfectly cut out, but yeah. It is very cool and great. And, you know, it was surprising for me to see Chiang Sheng do a little bit of a weapons choreography, because you usually see him as the acrobat. You know, he's so quick on his feet and light on his feet, and you see that here too. And I mean, I know nothing of it, I obviously can't do anything about it, but can't do anything like it. But the way some of these acrobatic fellas start, you know, flipping in such tight spaces, you know, out of nowhere, like animals, essentially, like a monkey, is awesome. You know, using the very little space and making cool cinema in the process. And and all throughout, I mean, we're in an era where we weren't faced with the possibility of action being shot poorly. I mean, we're in an era where static shots, calm editing goodness, multiple moves in one frame reigned. You know, it's a rarity today because filmmakers have to find different ways to dazzle the audience, which is a shame, because maybe it's the old man in me talking, but you know, when you watch a movie like Gallants, the Clement Chiang, Derek Kwok movie, and that adhered to the old style of shooting action, it was super thrilling. I mean, maybe it helped that it had veteran performers, but they were still old performers. So, but still, like, that was the best thrilling bit in a very, very good movie. And I'm so happy to go back to these after being, unfortunately, have been witness to a lot of badly shot action in today's day and age. But it's editing goodness, and all the early setup is you know, a decent catalyst for some narrative supported by kung fu. You know, the North and Shaolin versus each other, and Johnny Wang puppeteering it all, and it never lacks. You know, many low budget movies, independent movies, they just desperately filled with stuff, and at this time mainly comedy, but this one stays level. You know, it doesn't drop off once we have extensive training sequences, and all throughout there is that theme of the North and South in need of coming together, but at the same time they're sort of caught in this game of politics, and they're being puppeteered, and sort of needs to play along, and you know has to say, as you alluded to, like, we're one family, remember that. And I think that it's not dramatically moving, but I think that's very solid. It's very to keep interest all throughout, with a little bit of theme, cool action, training sequences that involve, and you catch yourself something solid all throughout, which could be rare even for Chiang Cheh. I mean, all of his movies, or his many movies, all of them weren't good. I mean, some of them were downright pretty awful, whether kung fu or not. You know, I mentioned that this movie feels educational. The way they train, the way the training sequences are structured and the exercises they do. But that may be, again, the novice in me, who doesn't know anything about it, saying that, and it might just be for cinematic, you know, convenience that they train in the way they do. But, you know, am I at all off or on in my sort of determination that this feels sort of educational, what the way they're training?
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm no expert boy, you know, but by any means, and but there are, I mean, if you look at how, I mean, are we talking about the Southern Shaolin guys?
Well, both really, but I'm thinking of the North Camp actually a little bit more, the way Pai training in the garden and stuff like that, and Philip Kwok's staff training, trying to hit all those rings that are getting smaller and smaller, you know, as he...
They're the Southern guys. Yeah, I mean, Wai Pai doing Wing Chun, and I do believe that Lung Ting was one of the choreograph guys on this, and he teaches his version of Wing Chun called Wing Tsun to differentiate it from Wing Chun, and then you've got Wing Tsun. One thing about martial arts, you always have little political things going on as well. So, I mean, he works with them obviously for the Wing Chun scenes, and I mean, there's a bit when he's Wei Pei's on these poles and he's practicing the first form called Silum Tao, which means little idea. From people that watch Warriors 2 should know all about that.
Another movie that felt educational when I watched it, like, I think this is sort of rooted in reality a little bit.
Yeah, well, there's bits in that, and Prodigal Son and everything else. I mean, you could even stick Challenge of the Masters in for when, like, he's Lao Garfei's at the camp with Chen Quintan, he's teaching him all about the stances and all that. It is all educational. I mean, a kung fu geek like me really, like, gets a kick out of that sort of stuff. But, you know, probably people that aren't couldn't be bothered. But, you know, it's just little things in there that you think, oh, you know, there's a little bit of reality in there. Just a slight touch.
And there's a lot of it here. I do think the movie earns, like, featuring training sequences in this extensive manner, because there's a good 20, 30 minutes of it, maybe?
I think so. No, I mean, you might be able to correct me. I mean, I'm assuming that this is because of the fact that earlier in 1978, Lao Garlung's 36 Chamber of Shaolin came out. And I know that's another Shaw Brothers film, but surely, obviously, this is like Chang Chae's way of cashing in on that sort of boom.
Yeah, who knows? But it still doesn't feel like it's riffing on 36 Chamber, though, because those were chambers. Those were like rooms with applications towards his skill eventually. So it's I would never make that determination without you saying it. You know,
it's interesting you said about the training sequences, given all the apparatus that they're using.
Yeah,
it's quite interesting to watch. I mean, I don't know how much you want me to talk about this.
Feel free to waffle, so to say. Like, I'm here to listen.
The Wing Chun, I've heard of guys that do train, like the Wing Chun statues are on poles, whether the fact that they are, or on logs, whether the fact that they are that high, but it's, you know, and he's standing on one leg and he's doing the form, and each time he falls off on his guard and he has to replant all the guys' plants and things like that. But it just does add some realism to it. I mean, it's when...
I mean, cinema is escapism, but it doesn't hurt to do it like this. I think the balance is sound that Cheng Chie and his action team provides here.
I mean, there was a few that worked on. I was looking on Hong Kong Movie Database for fighting directors. You got Robert Toy, Liu Feng, and they brought Lung Ting in for his expertise on, like, Wing Chun, obviously, like, with all the stances and the close range techniques that he's teaching him. You know, the bit when he puts him in the big room and he has to fight his way out, and then he does that, and then the room gets gradually smaller as he progresses. Yeah. So it does have little similarities with 36 Chamber of Shaolin, because each time he progresses in one chamber, the guy says, right, move on to the next one.
Yeah, that is true though. But I mean, that's the sign of a movie that is making carving its own identity, that that's probably connected, and then, you know, you don't see it immediately, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like, you know, starring Jackie Chan, like something transparent like that when you try to riff on Jackie Chan and things like that, or the Bruce exploitation stuff. So if anything, like, this is not exploiting anyone, and I know you're not saying that, but there are good observations actually, and you know, it's cinema too. So that room that drops onto is a Sun Chen or Wei Pai, by the way, probably Wei Pai. it's so amusing that that room is those walls that fall down perfectly. It's they're always well prepared. So but you know, that's cinema. That's fun. That's so much fun. Like, he's not making a deep, complex, serious kung fu movie here. It seems like after Five Venoms, which was pretty serious, they allowed themselves to have a little bit more fun, and certainly Crippled Avengers after this is just as batshit crazy compared to even Invincible Shaolin, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, going into Kwok Choi's training in the Southern Shaolin stuff, it is similar, a bit similar to 36 Chamber. I'll mention it again, because in that Liu Gaofei is doing the circular moves, but in this he's got like paper and he has to do his stuff strikes through
looks
paper.
Looks amazing. I mean, he's so talented. I mean, out of all these Venoms, he was the one that emerged with the most confident screen presence and a little bit more of a movie star aura, I think, Kwok Choi. And I mean, he only developed as the years went on. I mean, his most iconic role probably remains Hardboiled, you know, for good reason, because he's a good actor in Hardboiled as Mad Dog. He just looks amazing on screen, you know. That was the true find out of this Taiwanese Peking opera troupe, I think, Philip Kwok. I think that my least favorite is Wei Pai, to be honest, yeah. Because I really didn't like his performance in Five Venoms. He's fine here, but that he was dropped, so to say, from Crippled Avengers was no home, no foul for me. You know?
Yeah, Philip Kwok was excellent in it, and it's good because as he progresses, he starts with the big paper circles, and he goes down to the smaller ones. Once he's got that skill set sorted out, he needs to work on his light, you know, his light skills. So they use the iron rings. Now, they're used in a lot of systems. Hungar uses them, Choi Li Foot uses them, other systems to put on the arms for training the Kyusei, the bridge, and they also have conditioned them. Because when you're practicing like your punching and things like that, and these metal rings are sliding up and down, that's hardening up the bones on your arms and making your arms tougher. So he's got them on his feet, but that's good, because if you're training things like the staff, you'll start with if you use a really heavy staff. Once you get used to using that, when you start training with lighter staff, it's like using something made out of balsa wood. So because he's practicing or trying to practice his jumps like at height with these rings on, and you know, he's getting quite proficient. Once he's doing them without them, he can jump a lot higher. It is like proper training mythology, that the methodology that they are using.
And yet it is cinematic, you know, because yet it is fun and swift to go through, you know what I mean? It doesn't stop to be an instructional video.
Yeah, and the fact is as well, to get proficient, you'd need to train for a lot longer than these do in the film.
Just as a minor aside, veteran actor Chan Chen gets to play a rare good guy role. He's one of the elder Shaolin masters, ailing. And normally Chan Chen, with those big eyes, normally played bad guys really well in bit parts, worked all the time, and in the 70s and 80s in Shaw Brothers you see him everywhere. Like, after Ku Feng, I think he was one of the more frequent actors in Chan Chen usually got bit parts. It's normally a lot less than it is here, so it's one of his bigger roles, which is something I personally enjoyed. And and then you get the Lo Meng's training, of course, involves he's doing starts out with doing push-ups above eggs, and he has to avoid like smashing the eggs because he gets, you know, rock weights on his back, which is obviously super light. You know, they don't look they don't look heavy for 1 second, you know, but it's obviously a light prop that they put on the muscle man Lo Meng. But I wonder, the thing they call the mill that Lo Meng practices on, the thing that's spinning, when he punches it one way, obviously the rotation means that it's going to hit him in the back, and he has to train to avoid that. Do you know if that's a practical thing, a dummy that's worked on in real life, or is that just cinema?
I think that's cinema, because the style he's learning is Southern Praying Mantis, and I didn't know a little bit about training that. A lot of the time, you've got a partner, and a lot of the body conditioning, you're using the other person. So there's a thing called Big Boy, where you just bang into each other, rounding your back off, and that conditions your back. And then you've got specific drills that condition your ribs, your collarbones, arms, legs. The way that's working, he knocks it round, it hits him in the back, yeah? And hits him in the ribs. There's a bit that hits him in the chest. You've got all these conditioning drills that a lot of the time you're doing with a partner. I mean, I'm doing some chest conditioning now, so it's not as if it's...
Live on a podcast, ladies and gents.
Yeah, but it's obviously because he hasn't got a partner. They're obviously thinking, well, hey, we're going to get round to this. So they've got this thing called the mill. There is an exercise in Southern Mantis called Chiso, not to be confused with Chiso, which is an exercise from Wing Chun. Chiso is known as grinding arm. And that's supposedly based on when they used to use the old stone rice grinders. You move your arms in a circular motion and you do this with a partner, Chiso, and that can develop and conditions all your shoulders and all your muscles to develop your shock power, as they call it. So I'm just thinking that obviously he hasn't got a partner to do this stuff with, so they've had to come up with contraptions to use for him to be able to train with that also look really fucking cool in the film.
They do. I love that it spins really slow, but once it hits his back, it just throws him like you read about it. So it's wonderful. It's cool. And you can get back to it if you have any other notes, but to sort of move the discussion towards the latter half of the film, like dramatically this one camp is forced to follow Master's wishes and morals and ethics of revenge, if there's any ethics in revenge. But, you know, serving your master is an ethic. And therefore, these characters continue to be painted in a corner. They're not necessarily... They think they know who their enemies are. But even if they sort of mildly know, it seems like Johnny Wang Lung Wei is, you know, painting them all in a corner for his own, you know, means and all of that. And in order for the Manchu to continue to rule and all of that, but it all leads to a good ending that is quite a bloodbath after this movie has been relatively bloodless. But by the end we get a bloodbath like a Chang-Chi movie usually offers up, with people's chest being pulled to bits, and I mean they're crude effects, but it's still the Chang-Chi fun bloodbath that obviously leads to a big fight ending and a reveal that that it was Johnny Wang all along. Get him! And then it all comes together. They come together as one school and one family, and that's obviously what the movie is heading towards. But it's not complex and dramatic. It's not supposed to, but it comes down to this, Mike. It's amidst those two free movies, including Prodigal Son, where I can say simply, this is a good kung fu movie. You know, for those who can pick up the details like you, but also for viewers like me in for a good time. It is a good kung fu movie. It doesn't really have any weaknesses as such. And if you're disappointed by the Venoms, the five Venoms, the five deadly Venoms, the first movie, so to say, give this one a shot. I think it's simply better. For me, it is simply better. It might not look as cool. We might not have a, you know, masked element. And therefore, Invincible Shaolin probably had no chance of breaking through culturally like the other one did. But man, is it better. I think so anyway.
It's an awesome film. I saw it before. I mean, I'd been doing kung fu, but I'd not been doing Mantis kung fu when I saw this film, and I thought it was superb. I still think, you know, great. And then since I've started training, it's like, watch it again. You think, oh, hang on, he's doing this, he's doing that, he's doing that. It's still a great film, but you can also see what they've actually put into the film that's actually plausible, realistic training that people would do. The guy who goes to Master Z, when he says to me, he keeps mentioning this thing called San Bao Jin, and that's the first form you'll learn if you train Southern Mantis. And it means San Bao Jin is three-step arrow, and that just develops all your internal and external power and your power generation and all your stances. And I was watching it a couple of times, and I'm sure it said San Bao Jin, but the subtitles didn't say that. It said something else. But it does lead up to the finale, as you say. He's trained all these techniques. I mean, those push-ups he's doing on the, you know, where he's got his arse in the air and he's going down and then back up, they're called Ji-Sang-Up, the press-ups. And I'll tell you something, mate, they're bad enough to do on, you know, on your palms, let alone on your bloody fingertips. So, but the thing is, I mean, Lao Meng did train in Southern Mantis Kung Fu anyway.
Right.
From a young age. That's why his physique, he always says he's got it, it wasn't through weight training, it was from training this Southern Mantis Kung Fu.
Right.
Because a lot of the two-man strength drills that you do develop all your shoulders and your back and the strength in your, like your arms and that sort of power. And he trained with a guy called, I believe it was called Chu Gonghua, who was a disciple of a guy called Lao Tsui, who brought Southern Mantis to Hong Kong in the early 1900s. And he was with him for quite a few years, and he started getting in the films, because there's different branches. I'm not going to bore everybody. Just Google it and it'll give you all the information. But there are similarities. But the one thing I've got to say about the end fight, one of the major techniques in Southern Mantis Kung Fu is a hammer fist. They call it a Gao Choi. And it means to lay down or to come down. And it is basically the heavy artillery that's used in the Southern Mantis system. And he doesn't use it at all. But then I've realised that if he did start hitting Lu Feng with a couple of these, the fight would be over in about 15 seconds. So right. That wouldn't look good on screen then, would it?
No, exactly. You know, one thing that I thought of, if you remember The Five Venoms, Johnny Wang is in it, but he doesn't fight at all. He's merely sits down most of the movie. And I heard it's like a rumor that he was sort of in the doghouse of Chang Chieh's, that he'd done something. So he didn't give him a fighting role. And it seems like he's doing it again for this one. But then for the end, Johnny Wang has a little bit of fighting. So
he must have put a couple of bets on for him or something. That's all I can think.
Exactly. I mean, that's a guy who's just, you know, a fan favorite for good reason, Johnny Wang. And also a good director. His various modern action movies were always infused with a brutality that few matched. I mean, he made movies like Escape from Brothel, which may sound goofy, and it does have, you know, goofy elements, but man, is it brutal. And City Warriors and various movies like that. This Man is Dangerous, a very late Shaw Brothers movie that he directed, and he's the man who is dangerous in that movie.
Hong Kong Godfather as well.
Oh yes, of course.
Which is an awesome film, and if you haven't seen it, you need to see it, because it's fantastic.
We have a special on it that I didn't do. Our friend Sylvia Roran put together a podcast special on Hong Kong Godfather that is on the networks, and I'm going to link you all to that, because she loves the film and put that love and put it into a podcast in a very informative way.
Can I just put a little correction in? When I said, going back to Lao Meng, and I mentioned Lao Tsui bought Mantis, he bought Southern Mantis to Hong Kong, not Northern Mantis, before people start saying,
waffling on and wrongly so.
I do apologise. You can see why I don't do many of these.
I don't have any other notes other than that it is a recommendation from me for even casual Kung Fu fans. Like, it isn't education on screen for 90 minutes. Not at all. It's fun. It's good fun. Like, that's not me diminishing the nuances in the movie when I say good fun, because it certainly is, and there is a lot of cool stuff here, admirable stuff to pick up on, and for a fanatic like you and a practitioner, I'm sure it adds a few different dimensions that makes it fun to revisit and stuff like that.
When it is, I mean, there's a bit when he's, I'm just checking my notes, there's a bit when he's, you mentioned the mill, and then it's on called the barbell, which is like a wooden stave with two stone wheels at the end of it, and he uses it like a barbell. That is actually an implement that is used in martial arts anyway. A lot of guys I mentioned Gouji Ryo Karate, they use it, they call it a tan. And I do know a guy that teaches Chow Gar down south that does use it for practicing with his guys as well. They are cheap to make, but very, very useful for people, for your development, if you're training.
Right on, buddy. Let's do the availability then. This has been out there and still is to some extent, but nothing is in print on disc. But it is available, so I get to that. It had widescreen bootlegs in the past. Official UK widescreen VHS by Made in Hong Kong. They had this one as well. I never saw a trailer for it, but because they put trailers on their releases, and I bought Made in Hong Kong releases mainly off John Woo, which I have that stuff. But they did one in the UK in the 90s. And of course, we got a remastered DVD release in Hong Kong, courtesy of Celestial.
That
is now out of print. And seemingly a US DVD by Funimation is out of print as well. There is a Blu-ray available in Germany that is available in good quality, but it does not appear to have subtitles. But if you want to see it, and if you are in a variety of locations I'm going to list now, it is available on Netflix for instant streaming in the following territories: New Zealand, the UK, America, Ireland, Canada, and Australia. You know, I pay for the service, right? But I have this region switcher, so I, because I don't believe in region blocking as such. So it may not be in Sweden, but I could switch to the UK Netflix store and watch it that way. And that's what I did. It's only Cantonese language, and some may prefer this in Mandarin, but, you know, it didn't bother me, and it has good quality, and it's available, therefore. Like, if it's not on disc, you know, you'd wish it was on streaming at least. And in this case, it is. And a variety of Short Brothers movies are available on Netflix. Not all for UK, but a lot of martial arts movies and stuff like that. So Celestial are trying out Netflix and hopefully are going to increase ever so slightly the availability of titles and stuff like that. Because they did iTunes for a while. They still do. And that was mainly focused on martial arts and some comedies, some dramas, some special effects movies like Inframan, Mighty Peking Man, and things like that. So they still went fairly high profile with some dips into the obscure and things like that. Not for the UK. Oh yes, they did iTunes for the UK, but in the US store they had, for many titles, optional English dubs with your rental or purchase, stuff that did not appear on the iTunes UK store. So let's finish this one off then and do some availability, rather contact information, and then we're done. So this has been Podcast on Fire on the Podcast on Fire Network. We are on podcastonfire.com. Check out all the other shows on a variety of cinema, plus bonus episodes. If you have any questions or feedback, let us know, please, at the email address podcastonfire@googlemail.com. Follow the little buttons at the top of that page of the website leading to our Facebook, our Twitter, our streaming page on Stitcher Radio, and you can also download applications to stream us on Stitcher to your Apple device on the Apple App Store or Google Play. And you can also rate and subscribe to our iTunes feed and rate our show as well, and leave a written comment. I write about Hong Kong movies over at sogoodreviews.com, my video review at sleazykvideo.com. I also do Taiwanese movies and a variety of things, and my Twitter handle is at sogoodreviews. Despite not having a website presence for your school, give them a name check again. And
Walsall Chowgar, we have got a Facebook page. For anybody that's interested in Southern Mantis Kung Fu, there is an excellent Southern Mantis Kung Fu group on Facebook. Guys from all the different branches post training footage. It's a really good resource, and if anybody's interested, I'd recommend they have a look at it.
What's that group called, for reference sake?
Southern Praying Mantis Kung Fu.
Right on. Okay, Mike, thank you very much for doing it. It's always a pleasure to discuss movies in a variety of in-depth ways, whether a dramatic Jackie Chan and Sammo Hung movie or a fun but still educational and detailed Chang-Chi movie from Shaw Brothers. So you're a good man to discuss with, regardless of the genres, clearly. So I enjoyed that very much. So thank you for doing it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
And therefore, I've been Kennedy, and with me was Mike Maley. So say bye officially, buddy.
Bye-bye.